Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Arlene Cohen.
And you are listening to the midweek version of Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for ground claw stabbers.
We're stabbing today because we're kind of state.
Yeah, okay. It's that kind of a deal. Yep. So we're sponsored each time Arlene and I get together. We are sponsored by the Fire Poppies, all of them. Yeah, that's where did she do that? Oh, she was a guest on one of our Easter show, and she showed the Fire Poppies design she's stitching that gave her the name. That's a cool piece of art. Yeah. So check out Lowry Stands at Fire Poppies. Susan Winter, owner of Fire Poppies, Lowry Stands. She's one of your U.S. Well, she's sponsoring. So as far as I'm concerned, she's the U.S. distributor of Lowry Stands. She isn't, but she's sponsoring, so she is. I mean, that's the way that works. That's the way the world works, folks. She has several series in play. One that I think starts in June is the 365 Days of Warm Woolly Welcomes. I actually looked up that design by Amy Bruken. That's pretty, it's not my kind of thing, but I'm telling you, check it out. Check it out. There's some cute characters to represent the different holidays throughout the year. That's quite a design. I enjoyed looking at that. So check that out. And then if you're interested in the Brenda Gervais Coming to America series, get in touch with Susan at Fire Poppies to get on the list. I think shortly after May 1, shops are supposed to get information about how that's all going to work. That series is going to work. But right now, what Susan is doing is taking your name and contact information so that when she gets the information from Brenda, that she'll be able to share it with you and you'll be off and running. So get in touch with her if you're interested in that. And I'm sure there's no obligation. So just, you know, get on the list so that you can be involved in that thing. And the I demonstrated on the Sunday show in the little preambles that I did, Susan has the Riolis eggs from Russia, Easter eggs, that are pretty neat, that are built on a wooden, solid wood Easter egg, and you stitch a little band of needlepoint, you stitch a band, it's on like Lugana. I don't know that it's officially needlepoint, but who cares. And then use a bunch of beads, and you kind of make a wraparound thing that goes on this egg, and they're pretty neat, and they're really high quality, so check that out. And then the Royal Garden stitch along that Vaughn and I are doing starting July 5. Susan is putting together kits also, so she is a source for kits and or threads that you might be missing if you have all the other stuff. So check that all out at firepoppies.com. And as always, thanks to Susan for sponsoring us. We appreciate it.
Yes, absolutely.
We do. So, all right, the rest of the announcements will come later. So Arlene and I were talking before we started recording, and we realized we were basically doing a show. So I said, "Stop that! We got to record this." So we were talking about quarter stitches because somebody had asked on if I would demonstrate or if Vaughn or I would demonstrate a quarter stitch on a live show. And so this past Monday night, I demonstrated the quarter stitch. And for cross stitch, and then of course that led to the three-quarter stitch. And so then we were talking about how that used to be, those stitches used to be pretty common, but because the one that I have is a chart from, I don't know, 85 or 90 or something like that, that every angle has quarter stitches to fill in the stair steps. So you don't get that pixelated look. And to me, I mean, that's when I learned, and I just kind of accept them as part of a design. But you were saying what Mirabilia, you think, still does?
Yes, I think there are still, you could still find charts out there that use quarter stitches and three-quarter stitches. And it's all, you know, anything that's going to do, I think, anything that's going to do a realistic portrayal of something like a Mirabilia, if you're trying to get the angle of a face or an arm. I have not done a Mirabilia. I don't own any Mirabilia, so I might just be speaking out of nowhere here, but I'm pretty sure they have that. Now, That said, when you get something that's super large, like a Hade, you don't need the three-quarter stitches and the quarter stitches because it's that much larger. But when you're doing something that is a smaller size piece, but you're trying to get a realistic image produced, whether it's a human or a scene, a tree, something, you can find them. I agree with you, though. I don't think they're anywhere near as common as they might have been, you know, in years past. When I've picked up, you know, old copies of magazines that are from like the 80s or 90s, I think the patterns you find in there certainly feature them more often than not. I know that when I was telling you my beginning cross stitch story, and I've shared this a few times and on my floss tube and so on. But my first real cross stitch when I was 15, and it was a pattern out of a magazine, and it had like 80 colors, and I just jumped right in. And I know that I'm looking at this chart. I got the concept of, you know, every box was a box on, it was Ada cloth that I was using. And I know I encountered a box that had two symbols on it. And I paused and I looked at it, and I can remember trying to figure out what do I do with this? Like, I'm trying to think now. I suppose the magazine probably had a little, whether it was in the back or somewhere, because I'm thinking nowadays a magazine like Just Cross Stitch has somewhere a little guide or key to stitches. Usually the more, the specialty stitches, but I want to say it even includes something like a quarter stitch or three quarter stitch. And I wonder if that magazine I was working out of might have shown that, or if I just kind of figured out something in my head, or, you know, I don't know. It's the kind of thing that I know I just kind of puzzled through and wondered, I don't know if this is right or wrong, but this is how I'm doing it.
Yeah.
And I suppose some of it could be a little bit of, how you want to make it. Now that I'm thinking out loud, but I really think I did 2 3-quarter stitches when I encountered those boxes, because the 1-quarter stitch would get so lost.
Yes.
And I thought that I needed like the strand going diagonal for both colors.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, there comes a point, I think, in any stitcher's experience that they encounter something that they haven't seen before, and they need to figure out or learn how to do that.
Right.
And nowadays, it's so easy to reach out to people via online ways and any kind, and see, you know, what is going on here. So, yeah. But I do think that I agree they are nowhere near as common, but you can find them on certain designers and certain ways. I think you and I, neither of us have the stylistic interest in the kind of designs that put them, the designers that put them out there.
Right.
That was a really convoluted sentence. I hope you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, see that, and they used to be so common. I mean, the old charts, because I learned, I'm sure that there was, the first time I encountered them, there was some little legend somewhere that said that that's what these symbols mean and that's what you do. Mm-hmm. And so my early cross stitching I did, which was not a lot, that was just commonplace. And so that's one that I'm working on right now. This old chart, that's these three old world Santas that I pick mm-hmm. I pick at. I'm not working on it. I'm picking at it. But every slant is nothing but quarter stitches in between the full stitches, because it fills out the diagonal. And then mm-hmm. when you do a back stitch along the side, then you have that color solid to the back stitch instead of having little open spots. And it fills it in. It makes it look nice. And mm-hmm. These are Santas, so they have faces. And so the quarter stitches and three-quarter stitches allow you to create the angles that you need to make a more realistic face, head shape, so on and so forth. But I agree with you. I was saying something Monday night that when I do quarter stitches, like this one I'm doing single strand DMC on a 40 count over two. And so the quarter stitches are nothing. And so I always do them just a hair loose so that they, because if you do them with any tension at all, they just disappear into the cloth. And so I always do them just a hair loose to make sure they at least have some presence visually. But yeah, that's interesting that you would, because see, I've been through that mental process with three-quarter stitches, which for people who don't know, if you're doing over two, a three-quarter stitch is half a leg and then usually the top leg is a full stitch, you know, one over two. And then a half leg. So you kind of have a T with a really long top part and a really short post. And, but I have been through that very mental process because invariably when there are two quarter stitches in a box, then there'll be a black line, which means that you backstitch over that because that, you know, that divides the colors. But I have done that same thing. Well, wait a minute. If I do that, that means 2 3-quarter stitches, one of each color. And yeah, I've tried that too, and it doesn't work. But yeah, that's it's deceiving. 3-quarter stitches to me are deceiving, and I think you have to make some judgment calls with 3-quarter stitches and how you handle them.
Yes, and it obviously it totally depends on what part of a design you're in and where. Yes. Like again, thinking back to these early cross stitches that I did, I'm picturing the eyes of a little girl, and the eye was made up of, you know, 4 or 5 different colors, and they're all like little 1/2 and 3-quarter stitches, right. And just trying to do my best and sort of, you know, what makes sense in every individual square, and how, you know, so it would be sort of interesting to go downstairs, look at it now, and how might I do it differently now? You know, that's, yeah. I'm just thinking about it now, in those areas where there wouldn't necessarily be a actual backstitch between the two, like a backstitch of a different color, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not delineating between, let's say the edge of the face and, I don't know, something that's in the background, but it's literally like the part of her eye where you just want 2 shades of color to help give some beautiful color variation to it. And how that can affect it if you 1 3-quarter and 1/4 or how you play around with it. But it's the fun of experimentation when it comes to stitching. I know sometimes I get a little too impatient or frustrated, and impatient is the better word, where it's like, no, this is fine. I'm just going to keep going. And sometimes it is better to stop and try it another way and then pause and say, okay, which is better, A or B? You know, that's a good, it's a good lesson to take those extra moments sometimes to do that.
Oh yeah. Because, you know, eyes, buttons, any of those little details, because invariably there'll be an X, a full stitch, and then some quarter stitches around it, or 3-quarter stitches around it, and 4 different colors, because they're trying, and done right, you can get the effect. But yeah, I think sometimes it's worth fiddling, so worth going off to the side of your cloth and just making 3 or 4 eyes and see which one works best. I think that's worth it. It's, you know, yeah, you're right. It's how patient do you want to be? How much do you really want to get detail? Or do you just want an eye in there and you want to move on? And, you know, certainly entitled to do that. You know, that's certainly acceptable. But, those with the infinite detail in them where they really want to split it out. I wonder sometimes if that's what part of why a lot of that went away was – a lot of times you would have kits or you would have charts and they would call for a color and you would discover that you bought a whole skein to do 3 or 4 quarter stitches around something. And, you know, and then wait a minute, that is, you know, I don't want to spend money on a skein.
That still happens today, I think. Yeah. I think it's a little bit more common today that, not 100% common by any means, but I think it's a little bit more common today to see number of stitches involved in, you know, how many stitches of each color you need or are in this pattern, which potentially could help gauge, do I really want to go get this extra skein of this color, or is, you know, is this blue close enough because I'm only going to use it for three stitches, or, right, you know, some variation of that. But yeah, no, I agree. There's always that dilemma of how much are you going to use a color and where are you going to use it? And especially if it's just for a couple of quarter stitches that right. may not even show that much.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You have to, you know, yeah, for me, yeah, I'd buy the skein just because it would drive me nuts if I didn't use that color right where that eye is supposed to be. But,
You know, I remember, I couldn't tell you who it was and how long, it was a long time ago, but somebody on a floss tube was doing it was almost a comedy routine about a pattern. She bought all the called for threads and they were all, you know, weeks or gassed, or, you know, they weren't DMCs. And she just bought what was on the list and then was stitching it and realized that one of them was used for precisely one stitch. and again, she just, you know, I wish I could remember who this was. I can't, it just was a long time ago at this point, but, she just, you know, had to kind of laugh over it. And, you know, yes, I've just added to my stash, but what would make a designer do this? You know, you know, and it's a good question. I don't know, but I suppose that happens.
So, yeah. Well, see, yeah. And I would defend some designers in that it probably never enters their mind because they're probably sitting in a room with all the colors, certainly all the DMC colors, but all the Weeks colors, you know, all of them, they probably have all that. And so they don't even think about it. They're so wrapped up in the design that I want this color here. And, you know, I can see how that would happen. But from a stitcher perspective, it's like, really? You want me to spend $5 for a week's dye work, blah, 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 to do one stitch? What is that? You know?
Okay. Although in defense of weeks is not $5, but no, I just want to make that clear. Okay. But yes, no, absolutely. I know for my own designing, I'm not necessarily in the middle, but at the end, I'm looking at the stitch counts of, colors and how much I've used any one color. And I don't think I have at any point ever been in that position of, you know, so low, of any individual color, but maybe it's because that little moment in a floss tube years ago has stuck with me that I do constantly think, all right, don't forget to check the number of stitches in each color just in case. You know.
I look back that stocking that I did for our son that took, you know, I finished in 28 years.
Job there.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I didn't work out at study, trust me. But that, when I bought that one, that was one of those, what was it? Cross Stitch and Country Crafts magazine was running them. But there's a whole series of those highly detailed stockings, cross stitch stockings. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure that it was 82 different colors of DMC for that. And that really is the foundation of my stash, because you know, there's no way you used all those skeins. And in a lot of them, you'd used 4, 5, 6 stitches and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have a foundation and then through the years, as one of those colors got used up, then I would actually replace that color for no good reason other than I wanted to, you know, all right, I have a bobbin for that color, so I'm going to have the thread on it, you know. So I've maintained that and then build on it. But that was that 82 sticks in my mind, because I you know, the thought of buying 82 skeins of anything was just beyond any logic, but that's what it called for. And Yeah, it is. It's a way to, certainly can build your stash. Yeah, it's not a waste.
It's so amazing how similar our stories are, because the very project that I'm referring to that I was doing when I was 15, and again, I think had something like 80 colors in it. And again, I've told this story before, but that was also my beginning stash of DMC. And at that time, and for the first few projects after that, I bobbinated my DMCs. Uh-huh. Because that's what I thought you did. And so I still have I don't know what percentage it would be, whatever percentage is, small percentage of DMCs that are bobbinated in a container. And then at some point I thought, boy, this is a waste of my time. That's how I feel about, I know some people feel very strongly about bobbinating their threads, and it's just my opinion. But to me, it felt like when I discovered flossaway bags, I'm like, yes, that's the way you should do it. Again, my opinion. So, yeah. But my DMC collection is basically, I don't know, 10-20% in this box container. No, it's not even 20%, maybe 10%, whatever it is, in this box container, and then the rest in flossaway bags that are organized and put in these other boxes. And so I can very specifically say the bobbinated ones in that container are my oldest threads. Uh-huh. And they really do come from that, the first three or four projects that I did from cross stitch that were all these highly detailed, many color, build up your stash kind of projects. Right. So very much like you.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. That whole bobbin thing is so fascinating to me, because now see, I'm a mixed bag. So if it's DMC, I put it on bobbins, and that's because I store all my DMC in some old plain old fishing tackle boxes. And mm-hmm. So they're all in there in rows, all lined up, all numbered and everything on these bobbins. So all the DMC goes on bobbins, but then any other thread goes in flossaway bags. And I have no explanation for that. But then it's just the way it is. And any other threads are not at all organized. They're in drawers. Like my pearl cottons are in a drawer, but if I want a color, yeah, I get to paw through all of that to find it, mm-hmm. which is just awful. And then any specialty threads, any over dyes or anything else, they're in a couple of other drawers and same thing. Mm-hmm. But now if I buy a kit, if I kit up a project, then that, all that goes in a plastic bag and gets labeled, because invariably I kit something up and I'm not going to do it tomorrow. And mm-hmm. so I keep that. But then what drives me nuts is, I know I have that color somewhere. I know I have it because I remember buying it, and then it'll be one I bought in a kit. And so then I've been known mm-hmm. to rob a kit and then wait, how come I don't have this color? Yeah. Well, how mm-hmm. it goes. Yeah. But, see, for me, I find it rather therapeutic to sit down with a bunch of skeins of DMC and turn on the TV and wrap it around bobbins. I don't know. I just kind of.
And many people who bobbinate will say the same thing, that there's calming. There's a calming effect. There's an organizational effect. They have all good reasons for doing it. And, everyone to their own.
Yeah.
I get it. Absolutely. Yeah.
And it really is, if you look at it from a logical time perspective, it's really dumb, because you have a skein that is designed so that you can pull thread out without it getting detangled. Mm-hmm. And you have these handy little bags that you can write on and that have a punch hole in them, so you can put them on a ring. So any thread that is not in the skein, like you pull off an 18-inch length and then pull out a strand, and you got five strands sitting there, can all go in the bag. So it's very convenient, very fast.
Yeah.
And it makes perfect sense from a time management perspective to just do that. But I don't. Mm-hmm. I just don't. Yeah. And I don't know. Yeah. So it's one of those weird things, because, there are people who just, I wouldn't bobbinate on a bet. And,
Okay. So, I have a question for you then. You're doing, I'm pretty sure you're on your stay using Floesch,
correct?
Right?
Mm-hmm.
How are you dealing with your Floesch? What have you, how is that? How are you dealing with that?
Well, in the first place, a hank of Floesch is a pain in the butt.
Okay, yeah.
You know, finding the center so you can actually have a loop without, you know, mm-hmm. yeah, it's a pain in the butt. So okay. what I've been doing and is I've been sitting down and trying not to tangle up the hank and mm-hmm. pulling off 18-inch lengths and cutting a whole ton of them and then mm-hmm. putting them on a thread drop.
Okay.
And just leaving the hank because I've yet to be able to get one to open up so that it was a, you know, it was a clean loop, a clean hoop.
Yep. Okay.
And yeah. Oh, that's yeah. That is an annoyance. As much Floesch.
Did you cut up the whole hank or just like a whole bunch of it and then
a whole bunch of it? Yeah.
Okay.
Because I have full hanks. I have full hanks. All of my Floesch. I have a whole bunch of colors. All of it is full hanks. And mm-hmm. yeah, so I just cut up a whole bunch of it. And then when I use that up, I go cut up some more.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you have a trick? Cause I'd love your trick.
No, I mean, I laugh at myself and you will laugh at me for what I am doing, but I will share. So my current project, I'm using Floesch. I've been posting it on Instagram. And, you know, when I opened up the first, hank of it and, you know, encountered more or less what you're describing, how, you know, you open it up and you're trying to find how to make it into a big loop. But I got a big loop and then was trying to decide what I wanted to do about that big loop. And I laid it over the couch.
There it is. There's the point right there. What am I going to do with this thing?
So I laid it over the couch cushion, like the back of the couch cushion, because my stitching spot is on one end of the couch. And I have the other part of the couch I often like lay stuff on. Okay. So I laid it over the couch cushion as I was trying to like contemplate it. And I've more or less just left it laying on the couch cushion, opened like a nice big oval. Again, it's not like on the seating part of the couch cushion. It's on the back part of the couch cushion and it's a nice oval. And I just unwind a little bit. You know, it's right next to me where I'm stitching. I unwind and I cut. And when I need to sit on that part of the couch or whatever, I just pick it up and I move it and I hang it on, stitching stand has like a few pegs to hang. Uh-huh. I suppose you could hang. I mean, I, the only thing that hangs on there is usually my scissors, but when I need the couch, the back of the couch for something, I put the hank of thread there. But for the most part, like I'm looking at it now and my hank of Floesch is just laying on the back of my couch cushion. And, you know, sure. I think at one point it did occur to me, I should cut off a bunch and, you know, cut off, you know, the right size strands and, you know, have them somewhere, like more or less describe what you just described. But I just haven't done that because keeping it laying on the couch cushion has just plain worked for me. So,
well,
you know,
I will defend you. Simply getting mm-hmm. that into a clean loop, I would put mm-hmm. it somewhere where I could admire it too, because I have spent more than enough time trying to get that to happen. And finally, you just gave up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got one. Well, the one I'm using for Anya's Day, in trying to find the center, I got it so bollocksed up that I finally had to just go in and surgically remove some Floesch that was going to get thrown away just to find an end that wasn't tangled. Mm-hmm. You know, I got so frustrated. And so now I have it so it works. But those things, they really need to do like a twist tie or something.
I like your phrase, surgically remove.
That's what I did. I just said, I'm cutting this chunk out here. This is a tangled mess. I'm cutting this chunk out and then I'm going to go from there. And that opened the door. Yeah.
Well, so because I contemplated once I got it open in a big loop, should I just make one cut and then I would have the whole thing in equal size strands? And the problem with that is that seemed too long.
Yes.
And then I thought, that I make two cuts and that seemed too short.
Right.
And, you know, and other than playing, you know, what is it? Not Little Red Riding Hood. Who? Three Little Pig. This is too long.
Yeah,
this is too short.
Yep. This was just right.
Yeah. This is, That's why I didn't want to make either of those cuts, because like one was too long and one was too short. And that's why I just sort of said, well, I just want to leave it here and cut it off to be the size I want. Sure. And, you know, that's anyway, that's
same process here, because I had a loop with some threads, you know, crossed over and mixed up. But I thought, well, wait a minute, I'm just going to cut this sucker right in the middle. No, mm-hmm. I have exactly that. I have a bunch of lengths that are too long. If I cut them in mm-hmm. half again, they're all too short. So that doesn't work. Mm-hmm. No.
Mm-hmm.
It's less than pleasant. Yep. Well, and see, mm-hmm. and I'm hesitant to cut a lot of skeins of any kind to make a universal cut, like one cut through.
Yes.
Because from my needlepoint days and still today, a lot of times if you do that, then you'll run into, say, a Jessica stitch where I need a 4 foot length. Oh, no, I just cut that thread into 18 inch lengths. Oh, what am I going to do? You know, so I don't like to cut stuff. The only time I cut stuff like that is I will cut silks for, say, a sampler.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know that's the only place I'm going to use it. I'm certainly not going to use it for needlepoint. And if I do, I'll go buy a new skein.
Sure.
But I'll cut those into lengths. 18 inch lengths is usually, that's usually what I do, and put those on a thread drop mm-hmm. because I know that's going to be, you know, that's where that's going to be used, and I won't need any surprises. But, No, you can't. I'm really hesitant to just cut anything like that. Been burnt more than once on that. No thanks. Yeah, because you just get caught. But I mean, if you're doing nothing but cross stitch and you're nothing but say 18 inch lengths, then you can get away with that. But
sure,
Floesch doesn't allow that. Nope. Yeah, but if they would just put a twist tie. You know, just a simple little twist tie there that would help. Then,
You mean when, like, in to help open the loop thing?
Yeah, to define the loop.
Isn't there a little black, not twist tie, but like a little? There's a little thing that I know I either untied or cut when I first opened a skein. Yeah. Almost swear.
Oh. I don't think mine have that.
I'm not in front of it right now, so I'm not 100% going to commit to what I'm saying, but I'm pretty sure that there is a little black like band or tie that probably helped me in the loop thing.
Hmm. But because if I had that, I would not have had the tangled mess that I have. So, And there's no way I'd have taken that off, because obviously that had a purpose.
Well, but I did take it off. So what? See, and I'm not in front of it right now, so I can't analyze it while we're talking. But it is going to make me go and look at it when we're done recording here.
Well, that's first thing I'm doing when we're done is I'm running downstairs to see.
Yep.
No. I know I didn't have it on the Floesch, Hank of Floesch that I'm using. I would have. Okay. And for me, maybe it got removed and returned, you know, who knows? Who knows what happened? Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And then we were talking about backstitching and how people don't like to do that anymore.
Yeah. And so and this goes back to like my first cross stitching projects, which included backstitching. And from the very beginning, I thought, okay, that's part of what cross stitch is. And I mean, this was the mindset that I thought I knew. I could see immediately that it enhanced the look of at least the types of cross stitching that I was doing at that time. And I just did it. And it really wasn't until I started watching FlossTube that I realized that it was a thing that there are some people out there that don't like back stitching. And I was, you know, that's so appreciative of FlossTube because it not only has it brought me in contact with other Stitchers, but it has really opened my eyes to different ways that people think about things. Yeah. And it had never occurred to me that there is such a strong feeling about backstitching amongst a lot. I don't know what the percentage is, but amongst a lot of Stitchers out there.
Yeah, it's a lot.
And sure, there might be some designs that you might say, you know, like some letters that don't need to be outlined or something like that. But in general, when there's backstitching in a design, I think it always enhances the design.
Yes.
I mean, I love it when people post pictures on Facebook or Instagram or something of before and after when they've done the backstitching and just, you know, prove it again and again how much the backstitching makes the difference. But again, just I had no idea that people didn't like it until my eyes were opened, thanks to FlossTube.
Yeah, well, it's not uncommon to see descriptions of designs and have it pointed out. There's no backstitching.
I certainly picked up on that, and the patterns when I list them, I in my Etsy store, I will, you know, write things like full crosses only or, you know, something like that to make it really clear because I've become aware that that is something that some stitchers will look for. You know, some stitchers will say, I don't do back stitching. I don't do quarter stitches or half stitches. You know, I don't do blah, blah, blah. And so they are looking for patterns that are just full cross stitches. So, you know, I think that, you know, all power to you and, you know, be looking for the descriptions that say that. So yeah, that's what I've just learned to put that in my descriptions because of that. But I would never have known that had I not, you know, opened up my world of, you know, the interactions over the last, you know, 2-3 years of FlossTube and Stitch Mania Facebook group and other Facebook groups have just, it's been wonderful. It's been great. And I'm so glad to have found a stitching community because I've been stitching a long time. And have been on, you know, Facebook, and but I had not found the stitching groups that have really helped educate me in ways that I just didn't even realize I was missing an education about.
And backstitching, you know, not my favorite thing. I'll admit that right up front. But I, to me, the way to handle that is to do it as you go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's what I will do because. The thought of doing that when you're all done, yeah, it's kind of like, oh, geez, do I really want to? But then it does make such a difference. It just, you know, if you do it as you go, not only do you then not have that large task at the end, but you get to see what it's looking like and what it's, you know, how much better it looks with the backstitching in. So then I think when it comes to the next section, you almost want to do the backstitching because that section is going to look really good too. And so to me, doing it as you go, you kind of feed the meter. And
I totally agree. And I don't understand the people that don't do that. Like the people that, again, you watch their FlossTube videos and they sort of say with a sigh, and now I have to do all the backstitching.
Right.
And I'm thinking, but why didn't you do it while you were going? Everyone has their own style and everything. I get it. But I agree. It seems like you should do it as you go. You get the satisfaction of seeing how it enhances. And you're right. You just don't have to leave it all to the end.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and that then at the end, when you put in that last stitch, it truly is the last stitch. It's not, oh, now I got to go back and go through this whole thing again and put in the backstitching. No, it's all done. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's that visual as you're making your progress through the thing. Wow. Look how great that's going to look when I get the backstitching in, you know, this part's really going to look great with all those lines defined. And yeah, to me, it just, just keeps feeding you. So I don't know, but no, I know some people, they just hate it. And see, for me, if I was doing, like the cross stitching I'm doing lately is all samplers. So there's no way I would add it because I try to do those as true to the original as I can. But, quarter stitches, if I were doing something, you know, a design that was not a reproduction, I would, if I had angled elements, I would put the quarter stitches in as I go, because it's really, it's not like it's any more, it's really no more thread, because you're going to carry, you're going to carry that much thread from one to the next, one X to the next. So put them in and fill out that angle, because it just looked, to me, it looks so much better. It's worth it. Yeah. But, I appreciate, you know, it's like, that's what this hobby's about. Some people, I just want to make X's, and I'll make X's all day long, and I'll change colors every now and then, and that's what the hobby is for them. And, you know, more power to you. It's, everybody has their own thing that makes it fun for them. So, yeah. It's interesting. It's interesting. And that's just it. FlossTube has brought all that to the forefront, because you get to see all the different tastes from all over the world for effectively the same thing.
Yes.
You know, the same technique, the same procedure. But then you also, even for the same design, you get to see, well, I'm not doing that. You know, I'm doing this. And you get to see those things, and it enhances the hobby. There's no doubt.
Yep. This is my take on this. This is my variation on this. This is, yes. Yeah. Yep.
And it makes, all of that makes people at least stop and think. Good, bad, or indifferent, you stop and think. And what better is that than, stop and take another look. Well, wait a minute. But, you know, I don't like your idea, but boy, you gave me an idea. Well, all right, then see, we win, you know. Yep. Yeah, never dull, never dull. So these announcements, got to get the announcements in. Please check out our quarantine stitch hours. Now, in May, we're moving from Monday. It's been Monday, Wednesday, Saturday. Now we're moving to Tuesday, Thursday in May. So our live shows will be Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. Will that be the live shows? So no more Saturday show. So 8 o'clock Eastern, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday are our Tuesday and Thursday are our quarantine stitch hours at 8 o'clock Eastern. And then Friday night is our Friday night live show, also at 8 o'clock. So all the live shows are at 8 o'clock on the YouTube channel. And all you have to, the easiest way really is to subscribe to the YouTube channel, and then, click the little bell icon that gives you all the notices. And, I can't do it because I'm always signed in, but Marga has registered, because she monitors things during the live show for us, and she gets a notification a half hour ahead of time that we'll be live, and we always go live at 5 to 8 Eastern. We always go live, so there's a 5 minute period there so people can get signed in and get joined before we actually start the show. So Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday are our May live shows, 8 o'clock Eastern. And then obviously we continue with the Wednesday and Sunday show, podcast shows, because that's the basis of Fiber Talk. And encourage you, if you listen to the podcast, and this, like this one, if you are not using a podcast app on a mobile device, check it out. You just go to, there's a podcast app. If you have an iPhone built right in, comes with the software, and you just go there and you search for Fiber Talk and you subscribe, and then every time there's a new one, it is automatically put into your phone. And if you do it such that it downloads while you're at home, while you have Wi-Fi, then you don't have to stream it while you're out doing your walk or your exercise or driving in the car. And you have it, and then you don't need Wi-Fi, and you're not streaming. And especially if you are limited in your minutes, you can bypass that little problem. So check that out. Let's see what else we have going. There's so many things going on. So this Friday, May 1st, we start the Hannah Longstreth Stitch Along. So if you're interested in doing that, jump in. We start that on the 1st, but obviously you don't have to start on the 1st. I mean, if you don't have your stuff together or you didn't even know about it, you can join later, because I guarantee Yvonne and I are not going to fire through that thing in 3 days. by any stretch of the imagination. Yeah.
Are you sure about that?
I'm pretty darn sure. We are, I'd like to finish one of the things we started. just, you know, for the entertainment of it. So you can join. And then the Hannah Longstreth is the design that Vaughn and I are going to use to race each other on Mother's Day for our Mother's Day quarantine quarters event. And so Mother's Day at noon Eastern time on our YouTube channel, we are going to have 15-minute shows. So there'll be five of them at the top of every hour over the course of 4 hours. So starting at noon, we'll have a 15-minute show, and that will set it up. And we'll have prizes, so you'll be able to win charts, or I've gotten some other things. And you know, if you're interested in donating to the cause for that, so we have things to give away. Appreciate that. But for 15 minutes, then, so we'll get started. Ellie and Katie are going to do the presentations, and so we'll have prizes, and then that show ends at 15 after. And then Vaughn and I are going to start stitching. So we're going to stitch for 45 minutes. And then we'll come back at the top of the next hour and have a new show with more prizes and sponsors and so on and so forth. And then we'll update on how much we got stitched. And so we encourage, if you're going to join us or if you want to join us, set up little competitions with your friends. You know, say, hey, let's see how many stitches you and I can put in the same amount of time. And so we'll do that all the way. And then at 4 o'clock Eastern will be our last show where we'll see who won. And I can tell you right now, it's going to be Vaughna. I guarantee you. Yeah, it's,
and this is just based purely on how many stitches you can accomplish.
Right. Right.
In terms of winning. Okay.
Right. So like we'll start with the same motif because I'm not going to sit there and count stitches. Trust me. But we'll start, you know, stitch number one in this motif, and then we'll be able to see who's making progress. After 2 hours, Vaughn will be on her second motif, and I'll be halfway through the first one. That's how it's going to go. Because she's like lightning, and I'm like molasses. There we are. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So join us for that. That's going to be fun, Mother's Day. And, again, you know, doing this because people are at home, can't go out for brunch, Mother's Day brunch, families can't get together. So you're sitting there at home, staring at TV or staring at your spouse, whichever way it goes. And, so we'll occupy your mind for a while. And, cause Vaughn and I got the same situation. We're just sitting here. So that's, Mother's Day. So join us for that on the YouTube channel. And then also our stitch along on July 5, Debbie Rowley's Royal Gardens. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, Susan is putting together kits so you can get your Royal Garden kits from Susan at Fire Poppies. And then also just remind you that we now have the Fiber Talk Made Me Buy It t-shirts available and needle minders. So those are on the shop page at wetalkfiber.com is where they're at.
Yes.
So there, that's mm-hmm. all the stuff for right now.
That's a lot of stuff. Now, can I just like clarify in terms of dates? Because here we are, we're ending April, although it's like, I don't know what has happened to the month of April here. So, you know, as of when this recording goes up, Wednesday is the 29th.
Right.
And so you'll do a quarantine stitch hour on that Wednesday. And then Thursday's the 30th. And then Friday is May 1st, Friday Night Live happens.
Right.
But then this Saturday, there's no more quarantine stitch hour on Saturday because it's now May.
Correct.
So next week's the Tuesday and Thursday.
Correct.
We're in May.
Right.
Okay.
But I'm glad you brought up Saturday because I failed to mention 2 o'clock Eastern time because, you know, we don't have enough stuff going on. So here's one more thing.
Yeah.
2 o'clock Eastern this Saturday, May 2nd on our YouTube channel. Natalie Dupuy will be with us for a live show. Oh. And who's Natalie Dupuy? Well, if you catch the show from this past Sunday, which was a video show with Natalie about couching and of course, gold work, because couching and gold work go together, but couching in general, couching techniques based off a research paper she did for EGA under an EGA grant. So we did a video Sunday. So go check that out. But then the second part of that is that Saturday, May 2nd at 2 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, Natalie is going to be on live with Vaughn and me so that you can ask questions about couching and or gold work. And so that's going to, I'm looking forward to doing that. And so she'll be able to demonstrate, talk about history, whatever, with Natalie and do it live. And so, and we'll go, you know, we'll, I'm sure we'll do an hour, but we'll go till we want everybody to have a chance to ask questions. So if you watch that video this past Sunday with Natalie, have a piece of paper and a pencil ready or pen or whatever, and make some notes, because if you have questions, then save them for the show on Saturday at 2 o'clock Eastern, and we'll have Natalie on there live and you can ask her. So.
Excellent.
Yeah. This, I want to do more of that kind of thing. I think it's a good opportunity, and this one just presented itself. I mean, Natalie, we did back in September of last year, I did a regular show with her and really enjoyed it. I mean, she's a terrific lady and very talented. And then I saw her post that she had completed this paper under an EGA grant. I thought, wow, let's do a show and talk about that paper. And then it was, no, let's do a video show so we can show pictures and she can demonstrate and show real examples of various couching techniques. And so I just approached her, and she was kind enough to agree to do it, and just had a great time doing that show. And then I think it was halfway through the show, it entered my head, wait a minute, let's give people a chance in a live show to ask questions, because couching and gold work are not things that are commonplace. A lot of people, but I challenge you to not admire good gold work. It's stunning.
Yep.
So I thought, well, even for people who have never done it before, you know, this would be a chance to get a little more information. Maybe you'd find out you want to try it. And so it was all right at the end. Natalie, would you be willing to do this? Sure, I'd be happy to do it. So there we go. Looking forward to it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So check out that Sunday show. I'm really proud of it. I thought it came off quite well in terms of the information we provided. It was fun to do. So, yep.
Excellent.
Yeah, I admire people like Natalie, who is designing and teaching couching gold work, mainly gold work, and doing her own designs. And she has two young kids too. So raising two kids and doing all that, you know, and there's, you know, she's not the only one by far. There's a whole ton of designers who do the same thing. And I just so admire that, because just raising kids is like a time and a, you know, full time and a half job on its own. And then at night when you finally have a chance to sit down and do some design work and you really just want to go to bed. Yeah. So I admire that, but, enjoy Natalie. She's terrific. So looking forward to that Saturday. So join us, and join us even if you're not interested. Just join us, because there, you know, the history and learning how some of the early forms of needlework would be worth it.
Absolutely, you know. I learned something new. Absolutely, I can't say enough how much your conversations with people over the last 3 years have you been doing this?
Yeah.
Have just opened up so many new worlds and so many new explorations of different types of needlework and different types of everything. And I just, there's so much to be learned from the guests that you bring in. So yeah, go listen to it. Absolutely.
Yeah. Thanks for saying that too, because you know, that was the original goal. I didn't want to just do a cross stitch show or needlepoint show. I wanted to be able to do something that would, you know, broaden horizons and educate.
Yes,
and so I, you know, when you say that, it does make me feel good, because that was the goal, and work hard to achieve that, and to be able to show people, introduce stitchers to people from all over the world with techniques from all over the world. And because you just never know, you might see something you like, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, even if you, I mean, there might be someone who is always cross-stitch, always will cross-stitch, will not physically stitch anything but cross stitch, but might be really interested to just learn about something else that they've never, you know, they've never seen glue work before. They've never understood, they've never even had an idea of what the materials were for or something like that. And, you know, it's always worth growing and learning and seeing something new and different. And this has just been a wonderful venue for seeing all that kind of stuff or listening or hearing, and with some pictures and videos, absolutely seeing, you know, what is out there. And, you know, even if it's not something that you yourself are going to pick up and try or can't necessarily get access to the materials or whatever, I just think we are all better stitchers when we just learn more of what's out there. And yeah, that certainly comes from some of the people you have interviewed. Absolutely.
Yeah. And for me, you know, people say, you know, I've lost my enthusiasm for cross stitch. I just don't feel like it anymore. Instead of just sitting there and bemoaning that fact, go try a different technique.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just pick something up. Go do a little needlepoint. There's plenty of free stuff available anymore that mm-hmm. Designers, you know, just about every designer has a section on their site that here's a free little chart, you know, 3x3 inch or 4x4 inch chart. Go get one of those things, grab some threads out of your stash and try a new technique. And if nothing mm-hmm. else, if nothing else, you go, I hate that, I'm going back to my cross stitch. Well, all right, you're off the mark. You know, you're back in business. But yeah, you might find something you like. It's worth it. So
absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I will always be a believer that this is one of the few hobbies that offers one such a breadth of opportunities, techniques, opportunities, but also mm-hmm. where if you go and do one of those other techniques, I think it benefits your home technique. I think mm-hmm. it makes you a better stitcher.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I agree. You whether it's you've learned a different way to manipulate thread, or you've explored a different ground cloth or something like that, it's made you that much more aware of the thread or the ground cloth or what have you that you're used to. And it gives you more perspective on it. So total, I agree. And even for those of us that are more multi, I don't know what the word would be, don't necessarily have one home technique because we have multi techniques. It just that much more broadens everything that you're doing.
Right.
When you try new ones, and it's totally worth it.
Yep. No, I think so. Yeah. All right, Arlene. Now here we've done it. We've done it. Now when
yes.
I put together the sheet last night for what to talk about.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I just didn't know what to put together. So I threw some stuff mm-hmm. down, and I think my message to you was we should be able to get a show out of something from this.
Yep.
And so fired off the sheet of things to talk about. Then we started talking when we first signed on, and now we've done an entire hour. And other than the announcements, we have done zero things on the list.
Absolutely. Yes.
So pretty much a normal show for you and me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes we hit the topics on the list. Sometimes.
We've been known to.
I think this one was probably the best version of not hitting the topics on the list.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. Yeah. Yep. So there we go. So mm-hmm. for you listeners out there, there is a whole list. Maybe we'll hit them next time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You never know.
Yep.
All right. We're going to call it right there, Arlene. Thanks to Susan and Fire Poppies for sponsoring, and always a treat, Arlene. Thank you. Oh,
always. Yeah.
Works by ABC is where you get Arlene's designs. Works by ABC yeah. and the Etsy shop. Always want to get the plug in for Arlene on that. Check out her designs and check out her floss tube and her new design with the crushed cranberry cloth. I can't get past the cloth. that's a beauty. So
yep, I've been posting that on my Instagram right now, which is Works by ABC. So you can go check out pictures of that, and it will eventually be released. But it's just been the kind of design that I've wanted to share as I've been stitching it, and I've enjoyed the feedback I've gotten from it. So
beautiful.
Please go check it out.
Beautiful piece.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Now we're going to stop. Thanks, Arlene. Thanks for listening.
Thank you. Take care.